Waiting. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I don't know if I'm here with Dave or not.
Dave is here.
You are there. Okay. My great connection showed it was reconnecting and just kind of lost everything. So it's good to be here this Friday, January 4th, 2019. And today we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. And what a day it has been. And, of course, everybody got a little quiet today. We got a little quiet here at Discount Gold and Silver, only because gold is down $9.50. We're still holding $1,285 for gold. I think that's a tremendous, tremendous day for gold, considering all else that went on. Silver was down 6 cents today at $1,575. Platinum was up 23 at $824. Palladium was up 30 bucks, 2.40%, 1,309. We also have, I might be getting some weak internet feed here, so if I do happen to lose my connection, Dave, you might just have to carry on, my man, my friend.
Do what I have to do.
You got to do.
Absolutely.
Let's see if I can pull up the dollar here. The dollar was down 0.05 at 96.21. Crude oil was up 1.11 at 48.20. And the paper markets today, we'll talk about all the major headlines today. It's, really kind of goofy, but the Dow was up 745 points, 23,431. NASDAQ was up 4.25%, 6,738, up 275 points. And the S&P was up almost 3.5, 2,531, up 84. I don't see any reason why there wouldn't be any more Fed increases this year, Dave, with these numbers, right? So as much as they complain about the Fed raising rates with numbers like this, hey, why wouldn't the Fed raise rates, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the 10-year yield, 2.66%, 0.11. Remember yesterday it was 2.50. And let's see. Hey, people are becoming a little more confident. I can't even understand why people would become more confident in this area. I mean, in what's, it just doesn't even make sense, Dave. And
well, I don't know who's. To me, it depends on who's getting more or less confident. Certainly some traders and analysts, they're going gaga after today, probably nearly in shock. But consumer spending drives our GDP.
Yeah.
And, consumer confidence gets lower. I think as consumer confidence goes, so goes the 2019 economy. Now that's an oversimplification, obviously, but the market analysts and the pundits, who saw it this morning as an opportunity to just another opportunity to get in at another dip, are probably patting themselves on the back, although they had very little to do with what happened today. Just another crazy day in the markets, Melody.
Absolutely. We're going to touch on that. Of course, we're going to talk about the, more and more people are still talking about recession, but the jobs report was big, was up 312, record number of people working, manufacturing best in 20 years, which doesn't make sense because you had the ISM drop considerably. And that's what led to the big drop in the stock market this week. And of course, it's a 4-day trading week. I don't know what the volume was today in the market, but next week will be a full week of, so I think next week will be a more telling sign Exactly, Hispanic and unemployment, the lowest ever. I didn't know before we get in there, I don't know if, did you see anything about what was going on with the meeting at the White House? I was able to watch the press conference afterwards with President Trump, but I didn't know if you saw anything.
Yep. Yeah, we talk about it later on in the show.
All right, but it was interesting to see. Do you have anything on there about as far as the conference with Trump? Or I guess I can hold that till then. But so there you go, ladies and gentlemen, something to hold on to as we talk about that meeting, the wall, and the press conference. And I thought there was some interesting things in that press conference about the military version of eminent domain, possibly declaring national emergencies, and saying that this shutdown could last for years. I can't imagine it would. That's not going to happen. But you know, Wall Street's, again, there's more warnings that the economy is on a collision course with the recession. Everyone believes that growth is going to turn negative in 2019. Here's this David Rosenberg. I'm not sure where he's from. He's a Wall Streeter, but he's predicting, he predicted in November that the historic bull run was cracking, and that we're going to see the S&P and the 500 plunge 14 and 16% respectively from their all-time highs. So we got more than an 80% chance of a recession just based on the fact that the Fed is tightening, he said.
Yeah, he said this tightening of financial conditions that we've seen in the markets is going to end up having a cascading effect on the economy for the first few quarters of 2019. Now, Rosenberg, who's been known forever as a bear on Wall Street, is not predicting a prolonged downturn, but its effects, he contends, will be downright painful, noting risk premiums are going up across all asset classes. He said the severity of the recession doesn't give you a get-out-of-jail-free card when it comes to how the markets are going to respond. According to him, getting out of the recession will be a serious dilemma for Washington. He said, how are we going to stimulate fiscal policy? We already did that at the peak of the cycle, and now we don't have the fiscal ammunition. We certainly won't later in this year. Melody.
Well, you know, you have all these predictions. You have even the Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester. She came out and said earlier today that the Fed could stop hiking interest rates this year. If, you know, I mean, we're in the first 3 days of January, you know, the full three, you know, business days, you know. And they're talking about, you know, we see these big numbers rise, a 700-point rise and this and that. But, you know, when you look at the employment number, you know, she does talk about that the economy is going to tell us where we are. But, you know, we got a long way to go, ladies and gentlemen. And I guess Santa's Claus rally came a little bit late, Dave.
Yes, indeed it did. You know, Fed Chair Jerome Powell did leave the door open to another or other options for this year, you know, emphasizing data dependency and saying if the data do not hold up this year, you know, the Fed may change course. You know, the president, of course, has repeatedly expressed frustration with the Fed's raising rates, you know, arguing that it could disrupt the U.S. economy. Indeed, it has. You know, several well-respected Wall Street voices, including the widely followed economist Mohammed El Arian, as well as UBS's Art Cashin, have argued that Powell was forced to go through with a fourth rate hike in 2018 due to the risk of appearing politically coerced. You know, that another way of saying or suggesting that the Fed hiked rates in December to make sure no one had any doubts about its independence. I'm not so sure about that. Mester has previously stressed that Fed rate hikes are based on economic data, adding that the so-called neutral rates is a moving target and can vary over time. Yes, it does vary over time to the convenience of the Fed.
Let's go ahead. I want to talk about the jobs report. I mean, that was a big number. 312,000 jobs in December, Dave. You know, that Yeah, I'm going to talk about the jobs numbers.
December's stronger than expected jobs report hasn't alleviated fears that the economy is slowing down as the new year begins. You know, the economy added a reported 312,000 jobs in December, according to the Labor Department, far more than the 177,000 that were expected, and the largest increase in payroll since February of last year. You know, yet the unemployment rate rose 0.2% point to 3.9%, but it was viewed positively since 419,000 new workers joined the workforce, boosting the participation rate to 63.1%. That's up 0.2%. Now, despite the numbers, it's hard to be very forward-looking on the report. You know, at best, what this probably shows is that the labor market had some good momentum heading into last month's market turmoil. And I think that's really significant. And as you mentioned, the jobs report follows yesterday's December ISM manufacturing report, which showed a sudden drop in manufacturing activity and the biggest monthly drop since the financial crisis 10 years ago.
Yeah, so it's just like, so how do you have the best manufacturing numbers in 20 years? Okay, but and you know what, there was a sharp fall off in the report that was concerning. Was the there was a significant drop in new orders within that report. The job market tends to lag. The ISM is more forward looking, and that's why it's difficult to say this number will sway it one way or another. But economists expect the economy to slow down to a pace of growth just above 2% in the first half and slightly lower in the second. But other inflation-related data and the sharp drop in oil prices has dimmed expectations for much of a move up in price measures. And the PCE inflation index, which is watched by the Fed, that was up 1.9% in November, but still below their target.
Yeah, of particular note, you know, the manufacturing industry posted net job gains of $284,000 over all of 2018. That caps its best calendar year since 1997, 21 years ago. Manufacturing added $207,000 the year before in 2017. Now, a big priority for the administration, manufacturing saw marked hiring in December with an additional 32,000 jobs. Most of those gains occurred in blue-collar durable goods manufacturing, with growth in fabricated metals and computer and electronic products. Chet Motre, who's chief economist at the National Association of Manufacturers, said, "Manufacturers are bringing people back into the workforce, and we need this trend to continue." You know, the industry currently faces a workforce crisis with more than 500,000 open jobs today and almost 2.5 jobs expected to go unfilled over the next decade. That is a big problem, Melody, and closing that skills gap, as it's called, continues to be the top challenge facing U.S. manufacturers.
Is there a new wave of mall closures coming for 2019, Dave?
Well, for months there's been a steady stream of store closure announcements. You know, Sears, Bon-Ton earlier in the year, JCPenney, and lots of others that we've mentioned on an ongoing basis. And, you know, while the mall owners appear to be holding their own today, that could soon change with another wave of closures expected this year. Now, the vacancy rate at regional and super regional malls was 9% in the fourth quarter. That's based on a survey released yesterday covering 77 metropolitan areas across the country. Now, that's down ever so slightly from 9.1%, which is a seven-year high in the third quarter, but up significantly from 8.3% 1 year earlier. And it's also, you know, above a 10-year average vacancy rate for malls of 8.4%. Overall, U.S. retail vacancies remain flat at just a little over 10% in the fourth quarter.
Well, you know, in 2018, altogether, companies announced plans to shut more than 145 million square feet of retail space across the U.S. That outpaces the 102 million square feet of space in 2017. And that was a record at that time. So looking at 2019, retailers big and small are expected to shut a number of locations in these coming months. A lot of these announcements tend to come during the first quarter after the holiday season has finished. And, you know, companies will get a better grip on where they stand. We certainly expect retail vacancy rates to hold steady relatively in 2019. You're going to have rents continue to tick up slightly, but they're going to remain below the inflation rate. We don't know the fate of Sears. That's still uncertain. But the bankrupt department store chain could ultimately liquidate, and then you would have hundreds of more Sears and Kmart stores going dark, in addition to the more than 100 locations that the company is already in the process of shuttering. Well, the Democrats didn't take long. They got busy right away, and I guess they're trying to revamp, which is, I think, kind of scary, a little bit frightening, considering, I mean, you've seen some of these comments and videos and so forth of some of those that have been, you know, elected and so forth, and it's just like, you know, it truly is a circus on the Hill now. I mean, it's just so they're trying to revamp the campaign finance and voting rights laws, and so it could bring significant changes for corporate America and social media companies. This bill is titled, of course, It's Always for the People Act, that will be designated H.R. 1, signifying its place at the top of the Democrats' agenda. This is a, let's see, John Sarbanes of Maryland. I hate to admit it, but the bill's leading author and chair of the Democracy Reform Task Force said that the proposal is designed to hold elected officials accountable and make government more responsive. Yeah, that's worked in the past, hasn't it? And Sarbanes said that the bill is a once-in-a-generation reform package that will end the dominance of big money in our politics. They're not going to end dominance of big money in our politics because they all rely on that big money in their politics. So they're not going to do anything to cut that out. And they actually think that they're going to clean up Washington and get special interests out of the way. We've heard it before, we'll hear it again, and nothing will ever get done. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. We're heading into our break right now. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back.
We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk TimUpRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. And we've got lots of, we're excited. I'm finally going to make this announcement. So hopefully we're going to have a deadline when our new website is going to be opened for business, and we're working on it, and we're getting closer and closer each day, and became, you know, a little bit of a back burner for a long time this in 2018, only because there was other things that were, you know, deemed to be a little more important. So but we've put the website on the front burner, and I'd like to think it we'll be able to introduce it here in the next couple of weeks. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. There's going to be a lot of things that hopefully will be a little more interactive so people can make their comments. You know, we'll have some blogging going on. We'll be, you know, news and things to follow. And we want you to become part of our website also. So I'm very excited. And some of that might take a little bit more long. It might take a little longer to get it completed. But patience, my friends, something to look forward to in 2019. The new Democratic, I kind of lost my spot there, Dave. You know, the global economic growth is expected to fall in 2019. You wrote an article, and folks will be able to read it from the website and from by signing up for the newsletter about the global GDP falling in 2019. Do you want to tell us a little bit more, Dave?
Sure. Well, broadly speaking, Melody, the global economy hit its mark in 2018. With global GDP on track to finish the year 3.8% higher than where it started, and that at least is in line with where all the governments of the world have reported their numbers to be. Yet, you know, the result, whatever it really is, belies some notable discrepancies that are setting the tone for 2019 already. You know, we've mentioned a change in the U.S. House leadership, you know, along with higher core inflation, tighter monetary policy, a possible emphasis on possible easing of trade tensions. All of them combined mark a significant plot twist in the outlook for the year ahead. Now, although the so-called global synchronized growth was the prevailing theme going into the year last year, worldwide markets obviously soon got out of step. Chet Anaya, who happens to be a big too big to fail bank, Morgan Stanley's chief economist, points out that 2018 was a year of two halves. An annual growth clocked in at 4% for the first half before decelerating by almost one half in the second.
You also wrote that the projected global growth is gearing down to 3.6% this year and next.
Well, that's true, you know, and in the meantime, emerging markets are likely to see a reversal of their fortunes. You know, as growth subsides in the U.S. and in other developed countries, emerging markets should resume their role as the world's economic growth engines. You know, though they're typically more prone to extreme ups and downs, emerging markets as a whole typically grow at a faster pace than developed markets do. It's not surprising, and it's in fact intuitive. In 2018, however, that pattern diverged. You know, as U.S. economic growth ticked up the first half of the year, emerging markets contended with rising U.S. interest rates and a strengthening dollar. You know, and that coupled with the trade tensions rendered emerging market economies nearly defenseless against the barrage of negative external headwinds. Now, although emerging economies still managed to expand 4.8% last year, and that's more than twice the rate of developed markets, weaker growth in these markets ultimately resulted in slower overall global growth in the second half of the year.
Now you say the pendulum is set to swing back in their favor?
Well, at least it looks that way. I mean, most emerging markets maintained fiscal discipline anyway and a prudent monetary policy last year. You know, that was notable even in the face of external pressure such as the higher dollar and energy prices. But if anything, the harsher external environment in 2018 actually pushed emerging markets to build up more buffers, unlike, say, in the U.S., where our deficit soared close to $1 trillion and is expected this year to actually exceed it. Consequently, while GDP growth in the U.S. is likely to slow significantly in 2019, emerging markets should hold steady at 4.7% growth, and that's according to a consensus of economists.
The recent agreement between the U.S. and China to postpone proposed tariff increases for 90 days, do you think that could lead to some modest growth, particularly for China? I mean, they need it considering, you know, the last couple of days of, you know, supposedly all the bad news coming from them.
Yeah, a lot of sweat pouring off the hands and back of the necks of Chinese leaders, for sure. You know, easing trade tensions, could support China's growth and, and their momentum in global trade, both of which would benefit emerging markets, you know, which China still considered, part of. So as 2019 begins, the U.S. economy could get an initial boost from what's expected to be a record high tax refund season. Though I might add, no tax refunds are being issued or will be issued so long as this partial government shutdown continues. Nevertheless, there are a lot of other factors: tighter labor markets, fading fiscal stimulus, the absence of monetary accommodation. They likely mean significantly reduced growth for the U.S. as well as the other developed markets in 2019. And in fact, this year could be the year when quantitative easing turns decisively into quantitative tightening for many developed markets across the earth.
Yeah, but you know what? When you have this quantitative tightening, it's all going to fall apart. So they're darned if they do and darned if they don't. They can't continue to push, you know, stimulus to the trillions of dollars into these markets forever.
Indeed.
And once they start tightening, it's all going to fall apart. So all they're trying to do is find some sort of a balance. And so if somebody sneezes or hiccups or whatever, they're not going to be able to maintain any balance. I mean, I was reading, Dave, about, I mean, Iran is moving warships. You have Russia and China. I mean, there's so much going on that no one is talking about. Everybody thinks this is, you know, it doesn't really matter. It's no big deal. This is just something normal that they do. And, you know, it might be normal what they do, but in the meantime, if something, again, someone pushes the wrong button, says the wrong thing in the wrong manner, it's dangerous, ladies and gentlemen. And I think, you know, it's really just a matter of time until something, because that's what it always is, Dave. It's always, gee, who would have thought? Who would have thought that would have, you know, started the World War III or whatever it might be? You know, we always thought it would be, but it's always something from that left field. And, I mean, you have all this U.S. corporate credit risk that could run higher. You have all these highly leveraged companies that's going to have to contend with rising rates, and rates are going to rise. That's the only way these, you know, they have to rise.
Well, they will rise, although, you know, the trend is the opposite just the last few days. But the point is, you raise the point, I mean, absolutely, yeah. These factors and risks you know, coupled with, you know, fiscal stimulus and tax cuts fading, means the U.S. economy could swing from what was a good performance, relatively speaking, this year, notwithstanding December, you know, about 2.9% estimated GDP growth, you know, to well below that trend. You know, the consensus is that U.S. growth will drop to 2.6% in 2019, then to 2.0% in 2020. And that's a consensus of economists, who we note aren't always so accurate in these projections. So take it with a grain of salt, the specific numbers. But I think the point to remember here is, you know, it's going to continue to trend down from here before it trends back up. So, you know, will the Fed adjust to the weaker growth outlook and, you know, push the pause button? I don't know. Morgan Stanley economists, for one, think there'll be two more rate hikes. Several other of the big banks, market watchers, think there'll be at least one or two. Although, you know, as the new year opens, there are a number, more and more people, I should say, who believe now that, particularly with this wild market volatility, that the Fed will pause for all of 2019 to see just where the economy goes. You know, growth in Europe is likely to moderate. You know, the European Central Bank likely to begin policy normalization and raise its interest rates this year. Economists there forecast just 1.6% growth. That's down a little bit from 1.9 last year, but they're also forecasting another drop to 1.5 in 2020. Lots more in our blog coming on Monday.
Yes, and ladies and gentlemen, go to the website dgscoins.com and sign up, subscribe, and thanks, Dave. I appreciate it. You always have great information and something that's needed in the world that we live in today, a little bit different offtake on so many of these things. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that there were so many things going on that, you know, you don't see a whole lot. And, you know, I want to go back to, like, North Korea. They still have nuclear weapons. The trade war isn't over. The post-World War II global order is crumbling under the threat from populism, adversaries like China and Russia. You have an economic recession in the U.S. that's looking increasingly likely. You have North Korea. Pyongyang recently signaled that it's not going to give up its nuclear stockpile until the American nuclear threat to North Korea is eliminated. So, you know, that means, remove the troops from South Korea. Today, I see a headline from President Xi: China orders military to enhance combat readiness. Russia to deploy strike missiles in the Atlantic. Iran. I didn't pull up this. I don't see where Iran is sending warships to the Atlantic, closer to the U.S. waters. This is Reuters out of London. The Iranian naval is going to send warships to deploy in the Atlantic from March. This was a top commander said today, as the Islamic Republic seeks to increase the operating range of its naval forces to the backyard of the United States, its arch foe. Iran sees the presence of U.S. aircraft carriers in the Gulf as a security concern. You just never know. But I think these things are, it's like everything is coming together. You have Turkey is seeking U.S. This headline, Dave, cracks me up. Turkey is seeking major U.S. military support to adopt fight in Syria.
Huh?
Yeah. This is the Wall Street Journal. The plan for Turkey to take lead in fight against Islamic State could require more U.S. force, not less.
Oh, yeah, I see where you're going there. Okay.
I think what's going to happen there is we'll probably send money to Turkey like we do the Saudis, so the Saudis can fight in Yemen. So why don't we, you know, I don't know, but, you know, it's crazy. It's like you don't know which is what's what's real and what isn't real. You know, so, you know, when we talk about the North Korea, oh, everything was kissy kissy, everything was great, and all of a sudden, we're not going to do it.
We'll do it when you do it.
Yeah, we'll do it when you do it. But yet, you hear, oh, we've talked with them, everything's great, Pompeo is, you know, moving along, and maybe that's how these negotiations go. I don't know. And, you know, and again, then there's Iran again, as I just mentioned, their warships, you know, you can go ahead and talk about that.
Well, you know, in Iran, when Trump announced in May that he was withdrawing from the nuclear deal, you know, there were initial concerns of an arms race, possibly even a war, particularly involving Israel. So far, Iran has stayed in the deal, along with America's European allies. But, you know, with these crippling sanctions taking hold, you know, there's always the possibility that Iran is going to change its mind and say, we're out of here. You know, another worrying scenario is the possibility of escalation between Israel and Iran, you know, over Iran's presence, you know, close to Israel's border in Syria. That's a big one, and can't be discounted. Syria right now possibly is the most important point or place in the entire world for these reasons, because so many of the overlapping alliances and new and strange bedfellows seem to be evolving, and as evidenced by Melody's reporting here on Turkey's request for more American troops just after, you know, our president declared, you know, a withdrawal over the next, possibly now over the next 4 months. Crazy stuff. You know, there's Europe. I mean, you got the leaders of Europe's three big powers, Angela Merkel in Germany, Emmanuel Macron in France, almost, and Theresa May in the UK. I mean, they've been battered. And they're all looking for more trouble. Well, they're not looking for it, but trouble is ahead for them this year. I mean, Brexit is just 3 months away. There's no deal in sight. Migration there continues to rattle the establishment. I mean, Brussels, Belgium, you know, the government, folded because of that just recently. It's going to make the spring very interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting 2019. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back.
Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. You know, we talk about China, we talk about, you hear all these economists, and naturally they, to some degree, they have to put their foot forward to a, you know, something that's good and something somewhat optimistic. You know, they certainly can't be all gloom and doom, because then, you know, they wouldn't be you know, helping that consumer confidence. So we get where they're coming from, but there's still some signals that China's economy is faltering. That's a development that would have big effects, not just on their country, on the 1.4 billion people, but on companies around the world that have depended on the growing Chinese market for their products. And that affects the United States also. It's just not the trade war and so forth that affects the United States. It's also their economy. You have Apple blaming a slowing Chinese economy for hurting the company's earnings. You know, we talked a little bit about this yesterday. Apple's struggles in China could be more deeply rooted. And I think it is. I mean, the people in China are different than, you know, the consumers of Europe and America. You know, Starbucks, Jaguar, the luxury conglomerate LVMH also ran into trouble selling to Chinese consumers in 2018, as you have the car makers, the U.S. car makers like GM and Volkswagen. The trade war with the United States is a big factor weakening the Chinese economy. But changes to domestic banking policy are also hurting economic growth as well, Dave.
Yeah, Melody, you know, after decades of, you know, pretty substantial expansion, you know, the Chinese economy appears to be slowing down. I mean, growth is set to be the weakest at the end of last year since 1990, and that's at 6.6%. you know, some an analyst at Moody's wrote recently, the drivers of China's slowdown have yet to have their full impact on their economy, and ours, presumably, and the combination of both is unprecedented. And here's the important thing here, ladies and gentlemen. This creates a high degree of uncertainty and risk. Yeah, so what happens in China does not necessarily stay in China. In fact, what happens there, as Melody said earlier, just a few minutes ago, what happens there matters for businesses and markets across the globe. You know, the country's rapidly expanding middle class is, you know, turning into the biggest market on the planet for consumer goods like cars, smartphones, and, of course, beer.
Got to include beer.
Hey, it's a
what's a good economy without beer?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's to drown your sorrows. Thank you.
But they are still different over there. I wanted to look up, after reading about this, I wanted to look up what their savings rate is, because I do think the consumers over there are encouraged. Well, we know they're encouraged to buy gold. I think they're encouraged to save. So, you know, the things are a little bit different for those consumers. They haven't been westernized yet, if that would be a proper way of, you know, they're not consumers like we are yet. You know, and I wonder if you could go back to, Dave, you know, there being consumers like what we were in 1980, maybe? Would that be like a comparison, maybe, or maybe not?
I'm not sure. Be a little more specific.
Consumers' habits. You know, to where we're likely to go. I mean, in the 80s, I mean, credit cards, we still weren't going into debt, using our credit cards to survive, using credit cards to buy our needs and so forth. So,
mm-hmm.
So it'd be interesting to see if, you know, the Chinese consumers, you know, the amount of their debt. We know their government's in debt, but what about the people? You know, do they use debt the same we do? So are their purchasing habits maybe like what our purchasing habits were in the 80s as a comparison?
Yeah, well, we'll look into that. Look at that. I mean, we know, I mean, I just know that, I mean, that China has a high individual savings rate. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know what that means. We'll quantify some of this and report back to folks next week.
But, you know, their stocks, I mean, even the Shanghai Stock Index, that plunged into a bear market back in June. Since the start of 2018, it's down like 25%. But you don't have the same, again, the people in China don't, they're not invested. They don't have pension plans. I don't think they have retirement accounts that's invested in the stock market like what we do here in the States. So again, it's really not, when we talk about China and the United States and their economies and the consumers mainly, it's not apples to apples. It's, you know, it's certainly apples and oranges. But those concerns, those jitters have also affected the markets in Europe and the United States. And what remains uncertain is the severity of the slowdown and just how far will the Chinese government go in trying to soften the impact. Their projected growth for 2019 is 6.2% for 2019 and 6% in 2020, Dave. And so, you know, China is likely to meet the difficulties facing the economy with its trademark approach, juicing activity through government stimulus. But that's one thing their government does is equal to governments around the world.
Yeah, let me give a quick postscript if I could. I mean, sure. we'll look into this more next week, and do a nice comparison to the U.S. Going back to 1980, but you know the household savings rate in China, that's according to Forbes, rose from about 16% of disposable income in 1990 to, listen to this, 30% today. Now, what does today mean? I think this article was, this study was, well, that's. Well, that's a little dated. It is 2010, so we'll have to look for something more recent. But, you know, the comparable rate in the U.S. Was 3% before the financial crisis. It did rise to 6%, you know, I think by 2010. So that's an interesting start to our look into this issue, Melody.
Yes, it is. I appreciate that. So, yes, make sure you bring that details to us. Well, earlier we were talking about the new Democratic-controlled House that passed legislation last night that would end a partial government shutdown. Passage of the spending packages will not move Congress closer to reopening 9 unfunded federal departments for now. The measures do not include money for President Trump's proposed border wall. He has vowed not to sign them. Facing Trump's veto threat, the Senate will not waste its time to pass the House proposal. It leaves lawmakers in the White House no closer to breaking an impasse over the border barrier as we're nearing the 14th day of the government shutdown. I guess Schumer, Senate leader, Democratic Senate leader, Chuck Schumer told reporters that after the meeting that the president warned that he would keep the government shut for a very long period of time, months or even years.
Yeah, we know that Wednesday's briefing on border security in the White House Situation Room yielded little, if any, results. And the Dems apparently emerged from it, you know, even more adamantly opposed to funding the barrier. You know, an official statement of policy Thursday, the White House said Trump's advisors would recommend that the president veto the Democratic proposals. Let's see here. Yeah, the administration has called for $5 billion. That's been what we've been hearing now for a while. And in her remarks after House members voted her speaker yesterday, Nancy Pelosi went as far as to call the bill's Senate Republican appropriations legislation to reopen the government. That apparently from the fact that the bill they passed yesterday was identical to the one passed by the Republican-dominated House earlier last year. So there's a lot more to come of this. Melody, doesn't seem like we're any closer than we were when this thing started.
No, and I mean, it's, you know, they both drew the, you know, I don't know who's going to cross over the line first, but I mean, this really could, you know, the Democrats, I mean, this could, it's like, give the guy the money, all right? Everybody really does want border security. I mean, I don't think anybody disagrees with that, you know, and that by reaches, and it's becoming, there's no real issues other than the government doesn't have the money, but they can't come out and say that, to give them the money, except for, we don't like you, we want you out of there.
And or we don't like the wall, we don't like the physical barrier. I think the Dems would be smart to come back with an offer of $10 billion, twice what he's calling for, and just stipulate that, you know, it can't be used right now for, you know, any, you know, wall or fence. Let that be part of comprehensive immigration reform, which, of course, there's no guarantee, you know, that, you know, there'll be consensus within each house, much less in both houses, that would get the president's signature. But that's what this is all about. I mean, border security is a much bigger issue than shutting down the government, which just is not a good practice. I mean, whether or not you feel that government is a little bloated, completely bloated, you know, however you feel about that issue, I don't think this is the way to go about, you know, dealing with that. I mean, namely, you're dealing with, you know, a million people's lives. Well, you're dealing with many millions of people's services that they rely on. Wow. We're seeing pictures now of national forests being trashed because, you know, there are no rangers there to, you know, to oversee it or people to collect the trash. It's not a good thing.
Well, that might, those are some of the issues. But I mean, you know, when I go to a national forest, if I go in and create trash, I pick up my own trash.
Here, here.
So what's wrong with people today that they can't carry in and carry out their own trash? We become slobs.
Indeed. Look at the road, all of our roadsides.
You know, so, you know, it's like, you know, pick up your own trash. Carry it out. You know, if, unless you lived on the border or been around the border, I don't think a lot of people really understand, you know, some of the issues. Now, I don't believe that, and I get that sometimes you have to use eminent domain in order to build a road and so forth. But there's a lot of things that we don't hear about that's going on. And, you know, we've been told that I've heard from the president that there's part of the walls that are already being built. Well, let's see them. You know, where's that money coming from? But this isn't an issue anymore about the wall. This is no longer an issue about border security. This is no matter an issue about protecting this country. This is no longer an issue about just saying to the people who want to come to this country, just come here legally. What's the big deal? Get here legally. Go put your name in just like everybody else does. That's all we're saying. But this is now becoming an issue against Republicans, against Democrats, against Trump, against Pelosi. And it's becoming more of a personal issue against these people. And that's wrong. You know, so get over it. You know, we're going to have to be following this. Good Lord, I hope not for years. And but you know what, though? You will see an impact in the economy if it would go on for months. It's not going to go on for years. But if it did go on for months, you will begin to see an impact on the economy. You will see an impact in the stock market. You will see all the negative things that will affect that people don't want to happen. So that alone in itself will probably correct the situation. But good grief, grow up. Just grow, everyone. Grow up. Start acting like ladies and gentlemen. And it's just bizarre. It's, I don't know. It's just stupid. Just downright stupid.
Well, to go from stupid to outrageous, thing that bugs my craw, we have a minute or so left in the program today. We're reading that cabinet secretaries, the vice president, other top political appointees will receive pay raises of $10,000 per year.
Yeah.
Beginning tomorrow.
Yeah.
Now, the pay hikes are a consequence of the government shutdown. That's because an existing freeze on raises for top federal executives expired when Congress failed to pass a spending bill in December. Ironically, the hikes, the $10,000 raises, come into effect a week after the president signed an executive order eliminating raises for normal federal workers. Now keep that in mind this weekend as you think about things like equality, fairness, and other quaint things like that.
And you know what? If they don't get Homeland Security, is the flood insurance. Flood insurance.
How about
that?
It?
They have extended that, but it's another important area. 1-800-375-4188. We'll be back Monday, ladies and gentlemen. Have a safe weekend. Until then, God bless.
Single penny left for me. That's too bad.